Good morning. It is good to be with you all today, even virtually. It is good to be back home in North Carolina. I have spent the last year or so, from September 4th to July 10th, in Washington State with the Seattle Service Corps, a branch of the Episcopal Service Corps. My time in Seattle was one of growth, of discernment and discovery, and of struggle as well. I and my six housemates learned much about ourselves and the world we live in during our 10 and a half months together. Finishing our year in the midst of a pandemic, caught between the need for safety, but the moral calling to stand up for Black lives and protest police brutality, these tensions wore on us all, but I think also left each of us stronger than when we started. We are sustained every inch of the way by our Christian community, living intentionally together and trying to do God's work in our area of the world. The Seattle Service Corps, or SSC, is structured like every branch of the Episcopal Service Corps, in which a group of around 5 to 10 young people, typically in their 20s, live together in intentional community for about a year and work for local nonprofits, churches, social service providers, and the like. The pay isn't great, but that's not why we do it. It's an opportunity to step outside of the capitalist model of profit, advancement, and self-centered goals, and instead focus on community, on loving your neighbor, on giving what you can and knowing that you will be supported and sustained equally with those around you. I will tell you, joining the SSC was a leap of faith for me. I had never been to the Pacific Northwest before. Other than a 6-week stint in London, I had never lived in a city, or outside the Triangle for that matter, and I had never lived in an intentional community. Now, I want to explain a little bit what intentional community is, because I'll be honest and say that even though it's one of the core tenets of the Episcopal Service Corps model, I didn't understand what it was until I was already living it. Intentional community is a commitment to the people you live with, whether you literally share a room together, as I did with two other young women, or you simply share resources and neighborhood space. My six housemates and I shared a space with 3 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, and a living room that also contained our tiny kitchen and the dining table. Under normal circumstances, I would tell you that 3, maybe 4 people could live comfortably in this space. We had 7. It was tight, but it wasn't cramped. And that was because we were committed to each other, to the health of our community. No one dominated the fridge or pantry space. We had a rotating chore schedule. And most importantly, we had dinner together 3 times a week. These community dinners are really what held the house together. 3 nights a week, we all had to sit down and look at each other and eat the food that one of us made. No matter how long or hard your week was, these meals served to remind us that we were there for one another. Physically, because we fed each other and sat next to one another. Emotionally, because we would debrief our days collectively and commiserate over frustrating bosses or clients or a system that preys on the weak. We needed that emotional support, that wellspring of life and joy in Christian family, because the work we did could be incredibly taxing. One of my housemates worked in a day center for unsheltered people, providing food and clothing to clients who were mostly very kind, but occasionally someone would behave in a dangerous way that required the police to be called. Another one of my housemates worked in a food kitchen for the unsheltered population in another part of Seattle, and I know he used his de-escalation training several times his first month on the job. Another housemate did casework for an immigrant rights law office, where she had to ask clients to recount the most horrifying parts of their lives so that she could help them apply for asylum. Not all of us encountered daily trauma, but I just want to be clear that the work of the Lord is rarely pretty and instead is often full of pain and suffering. But our community sustained us. Our individual burdens would have been very difficult to bear alone, but spread among 7 willing people, we could handle anything the world sent our way. Now, a little bit about my service placement. I served as a ship visitor with the Seattle Seafarers Center for most of my year in the SSC, along with fellow SSC member Ellie. The Seattle Seafarers Center is funded in part by the Mission to Seafarers, an Anglican organization based in the United Kingdom dedicated to the welfare of seafarers worldwide. In Seattle, the center is primarily used as a home base for our ship visitors, of which there are usually 3 or 4 at a time. I frequently ship visited with either Ellie or one of the deacons who volunteered with the mission, 1 Episcopal deacon and 1 Catholic. And I would bet good money that most of you don't know the first thing about seafarers unless you've had a mariner in your family. I sure didn't know anything before I started the job. Just briefly, I'll tell you that seafarers, particularly those on container, grain, and cement ships, which are the ships that I primarily visited, are mostly Southeast Asian men with a fair number of Eastern European officers. The Philippines provides a huge share of the world's seafarers proportionate to the size of the Philippines, followed by China, India, and Myanmar. I've also met seafarers from South Korea, Russia, Ukraine, Romania, Poland, and Germany, to name just a few. The working language on the ships is English, although seafarers' proficiency in non-work-related English varies greatly from man to man. I'll also note that about 98% of seafarers are men, and in my many months on the ships, I met two women officers, neither of whom I got a chance to speak with, unfortunately. As a ship visitor, my job was to provide hospitality to crew members, providing material resources like cell phone SIM cards, magazines, books, and rosaries, especially to the predominantly Filipino Catholic crews. On every ship, there was a multi-layered exchange of courtesy. They wanted us to feel welcome, even though our job was to make them feel welcome. I'll go ahead and tell you that much of the time, when I was preparing to go ship visiting, I felt like the Gospels in today's Gospel reading. I felt like the disciples in today's Gospel reading, excuse me. For seafarers, the ship is like the deserted place that the 5,000 find themselves in. It doesn't have what they really need. For the 5,000, that thing they needed was food. For seafarers, it's their family, their friends, their community. I often felt like I didn't have enough to give them, or what I did have wouldn't be enough. What could I offer to men who hadn't seen their wives and children in half a year? I still don't know if I can give anyone a satisfying answer to that question. Instead, I'll tell you my favorite story, the one that made me realize the truth about my role and what I had to give, the tale of four Indian seafarers and a trip to Starbucks. As ship visitors, one of our main responsibilities was acting as a taxi service for crew members who wanted to leave their ship. We offer this service because the port is not very close to downtown, and cab rides can quickly become very expensive. So one chilly, cloudy day in mid-November, Ellie and I were asked to pick up four men and take them to the mall so that they could go shopping. We had met a few of these particular men before, the last time their ship was in Seattle, so we were able to greet them genuinely and ask how they were doing. In the beginning, it was a perfectly average ride, with us chatting about the typical topics. How long is your contract on the ship? Do you have a family back home? How old are your kids? We talked casually for most of the ride to the mall, where we dropped them off in front of Ross, which is a popular clothing store for seafarers. They got out of the van, milled around for a moment, and then waved for us to open the window. They said, "If you have time, there's a Starbucks around the corner if you want to join us for coffee." Ellie and I looked at each other, shrugged, and parked the car. We got in line with the seafarers and debated what to get, and when Ellie and I got up to the cashier, the men weren't really paying attention, so we pulled out our wallets and started to pay for our coffees. Almost immediately, one of the men descended on us and, lightheartedly, rebuked us, saying he would pay for the coffee. We thanked him, and I picked up my drink. I went to sit down, claiming a table while the rest of them waited for their coffees. Eventually, the same man came over and said, quite insistently, "Go order some food." And he said, verbatim, "Just because I say I'm going to buy you coffee doesn't mean I won't buy you food." I told him I wasn't hungry, but he would not be denied. So I got a donut. He tried to make me get a sandwich too, but I insisted I was okay. We eventually all sat down with our coffees and treats, and what I expected to be a short chat turned into a 45-minute, very entertaining conversation. They all made us guess their ages. Three were in their 20s, and the other was close to 50. Two of them seemed to be reasonably close friends, I think from the same area in India, and ragged on one another constantly, prompting the third young man to call them Tom and Jerry. But between the jokes and sarcasm, we also heard nuggets of truth. When they are in port, they are given 8 hours off at a time. That is time in which they may sleep or leave the ship, so choosing to go shopping or sightseeing means they may get little to no sleep that day. This may seem like quite the sacrifice, but it is nothing compared to one of the men's stories. His wife had recently given birth to a baby girl, and he would meet her for the first time when he went home 15 days later. He excitedly showed us pictures of a very chubby, adorable little girl. I am sure once he arrived home, he picked her up and never put her down. When the night ended and we returned them to the port, they left us with boxes of nice chocolates and asked us for a selfie. The following day, as their ship was about to leave port, we received a phone call saying goodbye, as the end of their contract meant that we would likely never see them again. It wasn't until we received that phone call that I realized just how much our time with them meant. On a ship, one can get incredibly lonely. You don't get to choose your crewmates, and you can almost never get away from them or see anyone else, much less your chosen friends and family. But these men had felt a real friendship with us, and it was meaningful enough for them to go significantly out of their way, buying us coffee, donuts, and chocolate. Our world wants us to believe that every resource is finite: money, time, energy, food, health. All of it can be depleted, and we are warned never to run out. Now, I would doubt very many of us could feed 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fish, but Christian community and love, the love of a neighbor that Jesus tells us is so important, that is a bottomless well for us to draw from. In fact, the more we draw from it, the more we spread that love, the more there is to draw from. That's what I learned from living in intentional community, and what I learned from my time as a ship visitor. Life is hard. Life right now, between a pandemic and an upcoming election, and the need to act in support of the oppressed, but the equal need to stay home and go nowhere, is really, really hard for a lot of us. I don't have the answers to all of our problems, but I also don't think that any one person should. It's our communities that make life remarkable, our love for God working through our love for neighbor. When we come together, excluding no one, lifting up everyone, loving everyone, that's where the magic happens. I've experienced a small part of it. I encourage you to find it in your life and broaden it, extend it to more people, and live deeply into our Christian commitment, a commitment that is not limited by blood or skin color or national origin or gender identification. Love thy neighbor, feed thy neighbor, clothe thy neighbor, and God will sustain you too.